This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
All right, I want to start the show by apologizing to Max. Max, tough one last night. I thought your Giants might have had it in the bag, so tough loss.
Sever for Trevor.
For your team.
Sever for Trevor.
How about that trip? Everybody, welcome on into First Take. It is Friday. We are happy to be here. I'm Charlie Arnold, joined by Max Kellerman, Stephen A. Smith, also Ryan Clark here with us to start the show. And everybody, I hope you were able to stay up a little later last night, because if you went to bed early, you might have missed that improbable comeback win by the Eagles. They were down by 12 points with just about 6 minutes to go in the game. And really, you can blame it on several miscues and penalties for the Giants that would put Philly in control. With just under 5 minutes, Carson Wentz hit Greg Ward Jr. with a 3-yard touchdown pass and then sealed it with a touchdown pass to Boston Scott with 40 seconds to go. Wentz finishing 25 for 43 with 359 passing yards, 2 touchdown passes and an interception. Scott, 12 carries for 46 yards and that game-winning score. Here's Wentz right after the game.
I was pretty surprised we pulled it off. When I threw it, I thought it was a little high, but he, like I said, he plays bigger than he is. And obviously there was a lot of emotions there. It was kind of a big exciting moment, but a big kind of sigh of relief, because we know we left a lot of plays out there. But the way we battled and found a way at the end of the game was huge for us.
Right. We are going to talk about that trip by Daniel Jones later on in the show. But Max, I want to start off by asking you, were you impressed with what you saw from Wentz last night?
No, I feel exactly the same way about Wentz this morning as I felt since the second half of last season, when people were pretending he was really good when he was just okay. He was a starting NFL quarterback. First of all, the pass to Boston Scott, that's as good as well a thrown ball as you could see in a high leverage moment like that, in spite of Wentz's own criticism about himself. That's why I hold him to a high standard. What do I say all the time? He has one perfectly thrown ball a game, right? Whoa, did you see that? 3 or 4 other okay plays, like good enough, and nothing else. Like bad decision after bad decision after bad decision. By the way, quarterback rating is an imperfect stat. I get it, but it's a decent like basis for a framework, comparing quarterbacks. You know how many times Carson Wentz has outplayed his opponent this year, meaning the quarterbacks on the other team, according to quarterback rating? 0. He has not done. He's been outplayed on the other side of the ball every single game. Okay, let's take yesterday. And I actually took notes, because I don't want to just go to stats and have Ryan Clark, although it's usually Dan Orlovsky, telling me that I'm just looking at the stats. Here's what I mean. First quarter, okay? The Eagles are up 7-0, 3rd and 9 from their own 12. Wentz gets phenomenal protection, holds the ball for like 7 seconds. Does he throw it away? No. Does he take, you know what he does? He takes a sack inside the 5-yard line. Can't happen. So then they have a lousy punt. The Giants start the drive on the Eagles 39. One play later, Golden Tate touchdown, game tied. Okay? So you're leading the league in turnovers, but those are the stats. These are like the less obvious plays, at least in the stats, that are backbreakers for a team. Like whatever you want to say about Carson Wentz, if Engram catches that pass, they lose. They shouldn't have been able to come back on the Giants, but it's the Giants, so they could. But wait. There's more. We don't have video of all of this, but how about end of the first quarter, 1st and 10 from the Giants 30, Ryan? You're laughing. He again holds the ball, refuses to get rid of it until he's in grasp, right? Takes an intentional grounding penalty. Loses 16 yards.
16-yard loss.
Why would he do that? He doesn't need to be a hero on every play. Then there's the play right after the interception. Wentz runs backwards over 20 yards, heaves a jump ball across his body. Nearly the entire field. Why? What's he doing there? Can you explain it to me? I don't get it. Same drive. He rolls to his left, throws a bizarre red zone interception. He threw a ball, had no chance at a positive outcome. What's he doing? Like, there's so much. I can't even get to it all. There's not enough time here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's a shovel pass to his receiver's back. Guys, if he was playing any other team other than the 1-6 Giants, he loses the game. It's the same thing every time. He wins against the worst teams in the league, barely. He has one great play a game, 3 or 4 other competent plays, and the rest is all bad decision-making and bad execution. He's tough as nails, but it's the same old Wentz.
Well, first of all, I just want to say this. I just want to say to America, I really, really appreciate Max making me laugh so early this morning. You know, you usually want to come out of First Take, you want to start on fire, you know, bring the rain the whole bit. And I said to myself, you know what, I'm going to sit back and relax, you know, because Max Kellerman has been working at this. He started July 25th, 2016. Max Kellerman has been on this show for almost 4.5 years, and he has never, and I mean never ever, taken so much time pointing out video about somebody until just now.
But check it out.
But this is what makes me laugh. Now, obviously, we're living in very serious times. There was a presidential debate on last night. I'll be damned if I'm going to lie about the fact that I was flicking channels, going back and forth, watching a football game and watching this.
You had the debate on the laptop and the game on the TV?
No. Actually, I've got multiple TVs, you know what I'm saying? So it's just a little thing going on.
Look at me. Listen, he brought it up, Ryan.
I didn't do that. But here's the thing that's so funny.
You're paying
attention to a Giants game. Congratulations.
Of course he is.
Because I'd be damned if it was easy for me to do. It was hard for me. I mean, it's the New York Giants. Even though I do think the judge has them playing really hard, and I'll give him credit for that. Let me say this to you, Max Kellerman, because my position has not changed either. I don't disagree with what you've highlighted and what you've said about Carson Wentz, but what I have religiously brought up, Ryan and Charlie, to Max Kellerman is, who's he playing with? DeSean Jackson, we wish him well because he took a nasty hit late in the game. He might be out for the rest of the season. I don't know what the hell is that. That was a nasty hit. But then you look at guys. I'm just looking at some of the people that Carson Wentz had to throw the ball to. Allow me to remind you, because I know you know, Ryan, but allow me to remind you. First of all, that was a beautiful dime he threw to Boston Scott to win
perfect.
The game. That was a perfect pass.
Perfect.
That was a beautiful pass.
Yeah, it
pass.
Was.
That's the kind of thing
yeah,
you don't
was.
Teach that.
One of those a game. He got one of those a game.
Here it is right here. Listen, some guys can't even do that. Not even one a game once a career.
No doubt.
That's good. So Carson Wentz got that talent. But let's just go down the list, y'all, with some of these players that caught passes. Jason Huntley, okay? Corey Clement, he's been around for a little while. Richard Rodgers. Travis Fulgham, John Hightower, Greg Ward. I mean, come on. I mean, look, Carson Wentz is struggling this year. There is no doubt about it. But when you look at the personnel that the brothers got available to him, I mean, my God.
He's struggling.
Listen.
The C and the K.
You're damn right he's struggling. I struggled too. Everybody would struggle. You understand? I understand it. In the end, what it comes down to is this. If he had better players, more experienced, more accomplished players, I think we can at least admit he'd look better. I'm not saying that it would be top-notch, whatever. I'm not saying that your concerns are wrong, Max. But I'm like, my God, have some compassion. Look at what he's working with.
He's an eagle, have no compassion.
I mean, listen, he's not working with much. And that's the issue, Ryan. That's all I'm trying to say. He's not working with much.
Yeah. So, Max, What's crazy is I'm not Dan Orlovsky crazy about Carson Wentz, but when I watch him, I see it. You know what I mean? When you look at him and you watch him fight and you watch him play, I'm gonna bring something up that ties in to Stephen A's point. One, before I mention this guy's name, I think Carson Wentz is a more talented passer than this person. I think Carson Wentz, in many ways, at this stage of his career, is a better quarterback than this person. Carson Wentz reminds me of Ben Roethlisberger when we played together.
Yep.
Before the Antonio Brown, but right around that time when we were really good as a football team. But remember, we would always have the number one, number two defense in the league. We always had an extremely good coach. We won football games, but we knew coming into games that we were going to have to watch Ben hold the ball too long and take sacks. We knew that he was going to throw the football to the other team every now and then. But we also knew that if you got into the Super Bowl and maybe Larry Fitzgerald splits two safeties on the outside to score a touchdown in the fourth quarter, and then he catches one in the corner of the end zone, and you need something special. You need some of that stuff. You need somebody that's going to fight. That maybe somehow he could drive you 90 yards and hit Santonio Holmes in the corner of an end zone. But see, the difference between who Ben Roethlisberger was then and who Ben Roethlisberger had around him then is why we see Carson Wentz in the way we see him. Because he's right. He is Stephen A's right. He is throwing the ball to John Hightower. I'm going to tell you something else about John Hightower, who made a great play last night on the deep ball late in that game. He also dropped a 3rd-and-22 that would have given them a first down on the other side of the 50 against the Baltimore Ravens on the 4th play of the entire game last week. But Carson Wentz went back to him. And so you're going to have to live with some of these ugly things that you hate seeing, because you're going to get the throw to Boston Scott. You're going to get the throw to Hightower. And I want to ask you this question, Max, because really this is all it comes down to, at least for this year. If you're the Dallas Cowboys, if you're the Washington football team, if you're the New York Giants, and they tell you right now today you can have Carson Wentz as your quarterback, I believe every team takes him. Every coach wants him, and while they want him, that team immediately becomes the front runner to win the NFC East.
He's way better
than all of those dudes.
I don't know. I don't think he outplayed Daniel Jones, even with Daniel Jones falling down. I thought it was about a wash. But let me say this. Number one, Roethlisberger is a great comparison, and a lot of people compared Wentz to Roethlisberger coming out. He's a football player first and then a quarterback, and so I get it. Here's the difference. Roethlisberger didn't regress. Don't tell me about the people around him. Carson Wentz was the MVP of the league through like week 14, and since then he has regressed. The team was going nowhere with Carson Wentz the following season. Nick Foles takes over after injury, after Nick Foles won the Super Bowl, and the team catches fire. They get to the playoffs to win a playoff game. Let me tell you, I totally agree with your assessment about Wentz, Ryan Clark. That's why I'm hard on him. You know what you said, and I referenced you not only on this show, but also on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, 2 p.m. Eastern, yesterday a bunch of times. When you brought up Baker Mayfield, and it was like a sad day almost. You were like, guys, it's even worse than you think. He's just okay. So you stop caring about a guy when he's just okay. Baker Mayfield says, I could be much better. No, he can't. He can be better. He can play better. Good for him. He can work hard. He ain't ever going to be elite. Carson Wentz has elite talent, Ryan. That's why I'm hard on him. He can be elite. He's been elite, but it's been a long time, and he's far from elite today.
Yeah, I think you're confusing sports. I think in the sport of basketball, when you're working with marginal talent, you're in a position to take over and do things for yourself and your team that you simply can't do with football. Carson Wentz, when Hightower dropped the ball, what was it, a 3rd-and-22, Ryan, that you talked about? Mm-hmm. And he dropped
the football. 3rd-and-22, yep.
There's nothing that Carson Wentz could do about
that's
stuff
not true.
Like that.
You know what he can do? He cannot make 5 stupid plays after that to try to make it all
well,
up.
Well, again.
That's the problem.
Guys, there's a lot of really stupid things happening in the NFC East right now. Only 6 wins throughout the entire division. There is only one division that is at a worse win percentage record at this point in the season. That would be the 1984 AFC Central. So this division is wide open.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
And on Sunday, Steelers, Titans in Nashville, both teams 5-0. The big question, will the steel curtain contain the disruptive Derrick Henry? Check this out, guys. The Steelers boast the most efficient run defense in the NFL and have not allowed an opposing running back to top 100 yards rushing in a game this season and have only allowed such a game just 3 times over the last 3 years. Ryan Clark still here with us. All right, from Max's Giants to Stephen A. Steelers. Stephen A., what do you think is going to happen this weekend? Is it going to be a Steelers or a Titans
win? I'm rolling with the Steelers. Don't get me wrong. I'm not that sure about it. I'm not going to sit up there and stick out my chest like that. I should be confident in it. I mean, the Tennessee Titans are the real deal. Make no mistake about it, particularly considering the way the combination of Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill have been performing over the last 16 games, which I saw a Greeny highlight on Get Up yesterday morning. Let me say this, though. I believe in the Steelers' defense against the run. And I believe once you neutralize the run, even though it's going to be a load to do against Derrick Henry because he's that kind of monster, the reality is that you're daring Ryan Tannehill to beat you. And I think that that's what you put your money on if you're the Steelers' defense. I got questions about this secondary because they got a bunch of short dudes there with Hayden and the crew. But I believe in Fitzpatrick. I believe in Tuitt. I believe in Watt and these boys. And I believe they will get to Ryan Tannehill. They will rattle him. It's going to be a tight game. It's going to be hard fought. I respect the hell out of Mike Vrabel. He's my coach of the year thus far. I don't care what anybody says. I think Mike Vrabel has done
a great job.
I think he's done a hell of a job. But I just love the kind of attitude you see in his players. They're rough riders. They don't back down from anybody. They always come ready to fight. And I love Vrabel as a coach. But you know how I feel about my brother Mike Tomlin, too. And he ain't going anywhere. And I think that Big Ben Roethlisberger with these crew, Claypool and all of these brothers, Juju Smith-Schuster's got to step up. James Conner continue run, giving me those 100-yard games. I think if there was ever a game for the Steelers to step up, it would be this game because as far as I'm concerned, you haven't really beaten anybody yet. This is the team. You better come ready. I think they know it. I think they will respond to the challenge. The steel curtain will rise to the occasion.
All right.
And somehow,
all right,
some way, Henry and Tannehill will be neutralized. Somebody got to say it because I can't seem to rely upon a former Super Bowl champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers to do it. Somebody's got to do it. That's why I'm doing it, okay?
Stop.
Somebody's got to do it. Look at you looking like a pastor. I didn't even notice that for a second. You look like a pastor, bro. I was doing Marcus Spears a pastor, but
time.
Now you look like
Ryan
one.
Ryan Tannehill's so great. I love Mike Vrabel. And then somewhere in the middle, you remember you were a Steelers fan and you were like, oh, let me say something good
so
about
So you're accusing
Mike
me of being mad.
Let me say something good
so you're
about
accusing
James
me of being
Conner.
Mad.
He didn't say
what?
You made a great point. He said that you're he said you contradicted yourself. Look, real quick, because I want Ryan to get at you.
Right.
But I like Tennessee in this game. Tennessee's had an uneven defensive season so far, but I think by and large they're a good defense. They had a good defensive performance against the Bills, a bad one against the Texans. Like, they're up and down. But a good defense is playing a great defense in Pittsburgh, especially against the run, and that's the Tennessee strength, right? This is why I'm taking Tennessee. Remember what you said last week, Stephen A., about how Baker Mayfield's going to have to get it done because they're not going to let them run. They're not going to let the Browns run. Baker couldn't do it. And I talk a lot about how very few quarterbacks would be great no matter who they were around, no matter what coaching they got, all that stuff. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes are going to be great no matter what system, who's their coach, who their teammates, they were going to be great. Most quarterbacks fall in the middle somewhere, right? Okay, I get that. So Baker Mayfield's better with Stefanski. Ryan Tannehill, who looked like a first-round bust, has been excellent since he's been in Tennessee. He turned the fortunes of that team around. It's not like they didn't have Derrick Henry before he got there. How good? Last year he was top 10 in QBR. He was ninth. Know what he is this year? Fourth. He's actually an excellent player. That doesn't mean, independent of coaching, he was going to be great no matter what. Clearly we've seen that that is not the case. Although with Adam Gase, it's, you know, the new Jeff Fisher for you, Stephen A. So that's really a bad situation.
I think Adam Gase is worse than Jeff Fisher.
Yeah, it could be. No, actually, it's Jeff Fisher minus the track record, right? But the point is that Tannehill, just because you give someone the right situation and the right coaching, doesn't mean they'll be excellent. They might go from bad to okay or good enough. Tannehill went from looking like a bust to excellent. He's been excellent. Red zone, everything, excellent. So I think if you dare him to beat you, he will, and I like Tennessee.
Listen, I'm not going to do what Stephen A. did because Stephen A. keeps going back to last week because we asked the question about which quarterback needed to play better. Had you asked me who was going to win, I would have told you the Steelers, and it was easy, the same way I did later on NFL Live. But you want to just pander to the fans of the Pittsburgh Steelers and say, "Ooh, look, I'm a fan. Ryan Clark ain't believing you." No, you ain't asked me that question. You asked for a different analysis. But you today, when they ask you to pick a winner, what you say? "Oh, well, I'm not that confident in it." This not the man that was dancing around his house after the Dallas Cowboys lost, is it? Right? This ain't the dude that was eating chocolate chip cookies and milk all on his IG. That's not the guy I know.
That's reserved for the Cowboy fans. That's reserved for the Cowboy fans. They hold a special place in my heart.
Let me tell you. Hey, so here is going to be the thing. This is what I know about the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is what I know about preparation. When Mike Tomlin can focus the Pittsburgh Steelers on one thing that people in Pittsburgh hold near and dear to their hearts, that's when they're the best. The one thing he's going to get this defense focused on is physicality.
Are you all right? We hear you. Listen, I understand where Ryan's coming from. And we're going to invite him back. He's having technical difficulties right now. It's apropos because when you try to come at me, things happen bad.
That was coming.
Bad things happen to
karma.
You. And that's
karma.
That's what I'm trying to say. But in the end, listen.
That's not karma.
Are you there? Are you back?
There he comes.
There
he comes.
In Steve's world, it could be Carmen, but no. To you,
I'm just saying.
Karma.
You were back. Yeah. You were back. That was, you know, I was just looking at
it. You know what that was? That's what all Jay-Z fans wanted to do before Nas dropped Ether. They wanted to cut his mic off. That's what that was about, because they already knew it was about to happen.
Jay-Z got Nas. Stop it.
I know. Mac, Ryan.
Contrary
to popular belief,
takeover was worse.
We're talking about this on your show.
Yep.
We're talking about this on your show.
I know that's
anyway.
Not what the popular opinion is, but they're wrong.
Listen, they're going to be focused on physicality, and this game is going to be about small spaces. And the reason I say small spaces was whenever we would get upset on defense in Pittsburgh, I'd always tell them, "If that's the guy, just give me a small space." Because in small spaces, you can't hide your character. In small spaces, you can't run. You can't flinch. You can't blink. This is what this game's going to be about. Somebody's going to have to come downhill and attack Derrick Henry. Somebody's going to have to come downhill and figure out that the run game has to be stopped by being the more aggressive, the more violent man. And I believe the more violent men play defense for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Robert Spillane has no ego, nothing to lose. Vince Williams has been counted out, has been underdog his whole entire career. T.J. Watt, Bud Dupree, Cam Hayward, they're going to have to make Ryan Tannehill beat him. But when Ryan Tannehill has to beat him, he's not playing against the Buffalo Bills defense that hasn't been good. He's not playing against the Jacksonville Jaguars defense that hasn't been good. This is going to be a statement game for the Pittsburgh Steelers. They got pushed back. They feel some type of way about that. This won't even be close.
That's
they
a really
will beat
good
them by two scores.
That's Ryan, a really
they
good
will beat
Ryan,
them
Ryan,
by
Ryan,
two
hold
scores.
On, Max. Hold on, Max. Ryan, I don't disagree with you. I got to ask you this question, though, because I was curious about this. Derrick Henry is one of the more powerful running backs we've seen in NFL history. Don't get me wrong. We've seen others, the Earl Campbells of the world and others. But he's one of the more powerful running backs. He runs straight up. Can you explain to me why everyone's always trying to hit him high? I'm not encouraging anybody to go after his knees and stuff like that. I want this guy around, and I can't stand it when I see guys going after guys.
Stay away from that stick bomb.
But I'm just asking, could you explain to me why people try to tackle this guy high? It makes no sense to me. What am I missing?
Okay, I have a question. I have a question for both of you. In all of Derrick Henry's highlights, when have you ever seen him stiff arm or run over anyone that's close to his size?
Never.
Well, never.
I will say this.
All
when
you ever seen
Earl
is
Thomas around. Earl Thomas ain't no small dude now.
Earl Thomas is a small dude. And he's in a position
but Ryan,
to where
if you get to the second
Derrick
level
Henry
of the defense, a big running
to,
back
stood,
is not going to find someone his size.
Maybe I got some problems with my eyes, Ryan.
This
I've
is
stood
what I'm
next to
you.
Both. Hey, Earl Thomas don't seem like that small of a dude to me.
Stephen A. Smith, Earl is 5'10". Stephen A. Smith, this is what I'm telling
talking
you.
About,
he has late play bravery. He don't have the same type of bravery when he round them dogs. I'm letting you know, and I've watched every single snap of every game. When he's in that mess and them boys are the same size, he don't run the same. He has
you
late
realize
bravery.
What you're saying?
And so when it's T.J. Watt, when it's Bud Dupree,
this
when it's Vince
news.
Williams, he going to have to see those boys.
This
it's
is breaking
different.
News. Do you realize the tone, the tenor in your voice when you
is?
Just talked about Derrick Henry? That you
yeah.
Oh,
and
you better watch your mouth.
Ryan
Stephen
making,
A. Smith, I'm
Ryan.
Telling you right now, Stephen A. Smith, right now, I would get in a track stance. If I knew it was run, I would take off running, and I was going to either have to hit Derrick Henry or the goal pole by the time I stopped. Somebody got to prove a point that it, when you get to the secondary, we not playing those games no more. Because you don't do that when you're in the front seven. I'm telling you, that junk is fake bravery.
Is
it's late bravery.
Ryan, what
fake
you're showing
bravery.
Me, I know where this is coming
very
from.
Brave.
This is coming from a Pittsburgh Steeler with a champion with a lot of pride. But more than that, see how angry Ryan is right now? There's a lot of hostility, that tells me, coming from Pittsburgh towards the Titans because of that postponed game.
The hell with your interpretation,
no, we do have to move on. A lot of bold statements
being made here. And Derrick Henry.
And it may be a little early to say, but this game,
take
you don't know, it could have some postseason implications.
Because, guys, this is and Derrick Henry in the
sixth
sentence?
Time that teams with records of 5-0 or better have met since the 1970 merger. And guess what? All five of those previous winners went on to the Super Bowl.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
After missing the postseason the last 2 years, the Pelicans are looking to turn things around with the hiring of veteran head coach Stan Van Gundy. Van Gundy, the former Miami Heat, Orlando Magic, and Detroit Pistons head coach, now becomes the seventh coach in Pelicans franchise history. A multi-year deal was reached on Wednesday, according to sources of ESPN. All right, Stephen A., do you have any problem with the hiring of Van Gundy as the Pelicans head coach?
I'm not going to say zero problems because I'm a bit torn. You know how I feel, Max. You know how religiously I've harped on the situation involving black coaches, how, once again, black coaches are being passed up. But I would like to remind everybody, Doc Rivers still has a coaching job. He's coaching in Philly now. Ty Lue is now a head coach. Thank God Alvin Gentry landed as a lead assistant in Sacramento under Luke Walton, because I thought it was kind of shady how he was let go in New Orleans, particularly considering the games missed by players, specifically Zion Williamson and things of that nature. But you had people reaching out to me yesterday, said, Stephen A., you said it was white privilege when Steve Nash got the job in Brooklyn. What about Stan Van Gundy? And I said, hold your horses. Now you're going too damn far. Here's the reason why. No disrespect to Steve Nash whatsoever. I'm a fan of his as a person and just overall, and as a, when he was a player. My only issue with Steve Nash, which is why I called him weeks ago to explain, Max, was to let him know it's not directed at you. I've been harping on this point for a quarter century, all my years covering the NBA. You know, no black man is going to get a head coaching job when they've never coached on any level. And then all of a sudden you land a job of that magnitude coaching Kyrie and Kevin Durant.
Your issue has been white privilege, which you've defined as without the resume, you right. get to skip steps.
That's right. And not only that, to that step. Like, for example, there's black coaches that never coached but got head coaching jobs. But they had rebuilding situations or reclamation projects. They didn't inherit a championship caliber squad right. like they have in Brooklyn with Durant and Kyrie, assuming that they're healthy. Let me get to my point about Stan Van Gundy. That's not applicable here. Stan Van Gundy was an assistant for years. Stan Van Gundy was a head coach in three locations. He did not fail in Miami. He did take them to an Eastern Conference Finals when they lost to Detroit. And then obviously the next year, 21 games in, Pat Riley had to get rid of him because he felt like, you know what, his temperament or whatever wasn't ideal for Shaq, D-Wade, a young D-Wade with Alonzo and those boys. And then Pat Riley went on and won the championship that year when Dwayne Wade averaged 39 points the last four games of that series against the Dallas Mavericks. Then Stan Van Gundy goes to Orlando. Stan Van Gundy goes to the playoffs. Stan Van Gundy goes to the NBA Finals with Dwight Howard anchoring that defensive front line. Stan Van Gundy has proven he can coach. he has proven he is a good dude with the right conscience as well. I'm a fan of Stan Van Gundy's as a person. I wish him nothing but the best. What I will say,
monster on Twitter, too.
That's right. What I will say about Stan Van Gundy is this. He never deserved to be the president of basketball operations for the Detroit Pistons. Now, if the Pelicans had brought him on and given him complete control of basketball operations, I would have said this is nonsense because based off of what happened in Detroit, no, you don't deserve that. But David Griffin is running the Pelicans. Stan Van Gundy deserves to be a head coach in this league. Would I have liked to see another black man get an opportunity because of the paucity of African Americans as head coaches in the NBA? Sure. But I can't look at Stan Van Gundy, who's a damn good coach, who's knowledgeable about the sport, who's contributed greatly to the NBA over the years. And I can't say enough about what he has contributed to the communities, disenfranchised communities across America, with his willingness to address certain subjects and bring attention to all of these things. I can't sit here with a straight face and complain about Stan Van Gundy. He has a resume. And he's conscientious enough to care about the things these players care about. If I'm going to blame anybody for white privilege in the NBA, I got news for you. I'm blaming the players, marquee dudes who never say a damn word about the paucity of African-American coaches. I'm certainly not going to blame Stan Van Gundy for taking this job, and I can't knock David Griffin for offering it to him.
First of all, Stan Van Gundy is an ally to the righteous.
Yes, he is.
And an excellent coach. And I love this hire for the New Orleans Pelicans. And I'll tell you why. First, his failure in Detroit was because he was wearing too many hats.
Yes.
It's the same way with Doc with the Clippers. They took GM responsibility away from Doc, and then they had a chance to win a championship, at least a chance, once he was just coaching. I have a feeling the same thing will be with Stan Van Gundy. I want to tell you why I think it's perfect. When you draft in a market like New Orleans, a guy like Zion Williamson, you're on the clock. You have 6 years to win a championship. Because let me tell you what's going to happen heading into year seven after 6 years. The agent is going to come to you more than likely and say, we're going to sign with the Lakers or the Heat or the Warriors or fill in the blank. Sexy team in great market that they want to go to, right? And big market with other opportunities, usually warm weather. That's what's going to happen. So you have 6 years. You're on the clock. What did he do when he took the Orlando job? Dwight Howard, a limited offensive player, but a great defender, had already been there for 3 years, Stephen A., right? He got drafted in 04, and I want to say Van Gundy got there in 07. So you only got a couple more years with Dwight Howard to make a run at a championship. What did he do? Surrounded him with shooters, turned Dwight Howard into a real good passer who could find the open guy, and created an offense that optimized whatever they had and got to a finals. In 2009, so it was the 8-9 season, right? Right in time before Dwight Howard then got his way out of town. I mean, he's shown you what he can do. Not that Zion Williamson is Dwight Howard and that he'll follow the same exact formula, but he was willing to think outside the box at the time. It wasn't exactly revolutionary, but it pushed the boundaries of the way the game was played, like extreme four shooters around that guy in the middle. So he's not afraid to think outside the box, look forward to think of creative solutions, and more than that, has a track record of getting the number one overall pick in a small market to make a legitimate finals run. You know what the difference between the Pelicans and the Magic are? These Pelicans and those Magic teams? This team has more talent. They have not only assets they can bring in the right pieces for, they may already have a lot of the right pieces. Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram. You'll figure out who works, who doesn't. You'll trade away, bring in someone, Drew Holiday. You have a veteran who can really play, a shooter like Redick. He has much more talent on this team than he had in Orlando, and he has more time to get it done because Zion's only in his second season. I love this hire for the Pelicans.
Well, let me say this. Van Gundy's going to have to be careful because we might love him, because he's outspoken, highly intelligent, very, very conscientious. All of those things are true. But he's also incredibly intense and obviously had a problem knowing how to relax at least at one point in his coaching career, which is why he didn't stick around in Miami. And I think it's important for him to recognize that softer side of him is going to have to be showcased with the modern-day player because they're a bit sensitive, and you don't want to alienate them in any way. You can have the support of David Griffin all you want to, but in the end, you better make sure to ingratiate yourself with those players so they want to go out and play for you. That's very, very
important.
At
his size and age, he's got to be careful not to get too intense for his own health.
Well, you were just talking about his handles during the break.
Oh, my God, I saw a video of him recently. He was putting the ball behind his back, between his legs, and, yes. And you know, for a dude of his size and age, I was very impressed.
Listen, I'm going to say, listen, he has a resume. He knows basketball. Mm-hmm. He knows how to coach. There's no deficiencies there. The only potential deficiency is what I brought up. But in the end, of all the people to make an argument against, I don't think this is the guy to do that with. He deserved to be a head coach in the NBA.
I think it's the right hire.
Well, on the subject of being creative, Max, you know, you talk about that. Hopefully he can find something that works and that sticks, because according to Elias, last season the Pelicans had 140 different lineups throughout the season.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I just haven't been good. And I haven't matched enough good plays together for my liking. And that's what it comes down to. And when I mean good plays, I mean right reads, I mean ball positioning, I mean, you know, making guys miss. I mean, just the whole gamut of how I play. And I know what I'm capable of. And my standard is extremely high, and I haven't been meeting it, my personal standard. So that's how I feel.
Now, Cam Newton definitely has a very high standard for himself. He knows he needs to play at a higher level as the Patriots work to get back to just a 500 record. What's that?
He needs to elevate his wardrobe. How about that? I mean, somebody needs to say it at some point.
He's got his own ideas about that one. Okay, look, yeah, the Patriots not even at a 500
record right now. That's right, Ryan. I said it.
2-3 on the season. Yeah. Also this Sunday, marking Jimmy G's first visit back to Foxborough since being traded to the 49ers. Ryan Clark back here with us. Maybe you're giving Cam Newton some ideas since, you know, I'll go with Stephen A. You've got the pastor look going on today. Max, I want to direct this question at you, though. What would a win mean for the Patriots this weekend?
A whole lot, because a loss would be a disaster for them. And let me explain. The Patriots are pretty good this year, right? They have a quality win against the Dolphins. As that turned out, that's a quality win. And against the Raiders. And as that turns out, that's a really good win. And Cam did not play well against the Raiders. And in terms of their losses, they have a couple of quality ones, too. Barely against the Seahawks in a great game. It's the best game I've seen in a while. And to the Chiefs without Cam, Cole's going against them the whole thing. So 2-2, they were all right. Then they lost to the Broncos. And they were off for a while, and Cam was rusty. I get it. Now they have the Niners. Niners coming off a good win. You're going to go to 2-4? The thing about when you had Tom Brady as quarterback is, whatever the excuse is, you were never 2-4. When you were struggling, maybe you were 500, whatever, and you ended the season with double-digit wins every year. And as I keep saying, Brady left the cupboard bare for Belichick, because a lot of this is obviously, like, we can say, oh, that's not really the way this works. It's exactly the way it works. Belichick and Brady have enormous egos, or they wouldn't be the GOATs. You can't get to where they were without enormous egos, where they are. Who was it more, Belichick or Brady? That's the argument in sports. It's one of the great ones of all time in American sports, really, at this point. Who was it more, Belichick or Brady? Brady made sure by the time he was gone, Belichick didn't have a quarterback. He had to scramble, and luckily Cam Newton was available, right? Brady also made sure he went to a lovely situation in Tampa Bay where he would get the most credit possible. Just don't turn the ball over, and they would have. Jameis hadn't turned the ball over. They'd won 9, maybe 10 games last year, right? Doesn't matter. No one wants to hear the excuses. We are watching Belichick and Brady, and we want to see who does better. My prediction is Belichick. Doesn't look so good. If they go to 2-4 while Brady's riding high, does it? And 2-4, considering the Bills, who are maybe not all we cracked them up to be early on, but that's a good team. Considering the Dolphins, who are at 500 and already pretty tough to beat, and now they're going to start Tua, and they feel that that's because that's an improvement, not just for the future, but right now over Fitzpatrick. Imagine if the Patriots wind up with 6 or 7 wins this year and Brady goes to the NFC Championship game or something. This is a huge game for the Patriots. No excuses. Cam Rusty, the defense, hurt or defecting before the season because of COVID opting out. No one wants to hear it. Because when Brady was there, the excuses didn't matter. They didn't need them because you were always winning. What are the Patriots now? Are they a one close play away from beating the Seahawks? An excuse about a call going against them against the Chiefs? Or are they a winning franchise? We're about to find out.
Let me say this to you, Max. Usually, obviously, it's a debate show. We need to disagree. But we don't, for the most part, with this. I think you're right. But I also think that it's really, you're really more correct because of this particular game coming up, not this particular season. This game coming up right now is Jimmy Garoppolo on the other side. That was supposed to be the successor to Tom Brady. Tom Brady didn't want to leave. He wanted to stay. I supported that. Mr. Kraft obviously supported that. As a result, Bill Belichick ends up trading him for a second-round pick. I don't think there's any doubt that it was out of frustration because, hey, the bottom line is, in the end, you want to do that. But Jimmy Garoppolo's on the other side. That's why this your points are very valid. If it were not for this game, I'm thinking COVID-19. I'm thinking Cam testing positive for it. I'm thinking about him having to miss a game. I'm thinking about N'Keal Harry, who can't get open. I'm thinking about Bill Belichick's history of not being able to draft good at the wide receiver spot. I'm thinking about all of those things, and I would say we ain't never had a season like this. Normally, I would give them a pass, but this game right here, Cam better not get outplayed by Garoppolo, or Boston is not going to be kind to him.
Ryan?
I don't think that's even it. Here's why it's big, and it's more to Max's point. Tampa Bay saw its first adversity this year. They didn't play well. Tom Brady blows up on the sideline against Chicago. Tom Brady forgets what down it is, and they lose a game. It's all falling down in Tampa Bay. They go back to work. Tom Brady gets that team focused. They come out and play the Green Bay Packers, which they weren't favored to win. And they blow them up. They have no penalties. They play discipline. Tom Brady plays well. He doesn't turn the ball over. They win the football game. This is now Bill Belichick's adversity without Tom Brady, with a new quarterback, with a new team. Rob Ninkovich said they normally go back to basics in these times. Well, for the last 2 decades, going back to basics has been going back to Tom Brady and what works. This is Bill Belichick's first chance at that this season with a new team and a new quarterback. This game is more than important. This game is everything. This game sets a tone for the rest of the season. They have to win this game, and it's all on Bill Belichick.
Yeah, no excuses on this one. The Patriots hoping to avoid consecutive losses at home for the first time since November of 2008.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.